Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. We appreciate everyone tuning in whenever and however you're watching and listening, whether it's right now live on YouTube or Facebook or pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. You can find us. It is the eve of the Greenville Super Regional, and you know we got a big show planned for you. During our second half hour, we're going to be catching up with Smitty, former East Carolina pitcher Tyler Smith. But right now, Kyle and Matt and I are joined by Jeff Barker. He is with CBS Austin. He's the sports anchor there. He was nice enough to share some exclusive audio, his conversation with Texas head coach David Pierce. But we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Jeff, welcome into the show.
Appreciate you guys having me. Looking forward to a fun super regional out there in Greenville.
Jeff, started off, were you surprised when you saw the David Pierce audio go viral on Twitter, et cetera, and the reaction from Pirate Nation? I guess the clip was kind of taken out of context.
So I honestly was quite surprised. Like, I remember saying to some of the people here, like, once I listened to it back again, I was like, all right, well, I see why the ECU people would take it as a shot. And obviously, you know, David does have some history going back to when he was at Tulane, when he was an assistant at UH, and, you know, a couple other stops. This won't be the first time that he's been there. It'll be the first time the Longhorns have been there and these guys have been there. But yeah, he's a real honest, genuine guy. And like, that's why I didn't take it as him trying to take a shot. Cause later on he was kind of asked a similar, I just asked him that question about going on the road. It wasn't even super ECU centric or anything, or Greenville centric, whatever. But later he was kind of asked more specifically, another follow-up, maybe a couple minutes later. And they, you know, at that point he talked more about kind of like, oh, you know, love the program. You know, they've done a great job, very complimentary. So that's why when I responded to someone, I was like, overall, he was real complimentary. And everyone was like, kind of dunked on me. Like, well, that didn't come across that way. So I just posted what he answered to my question. And he definitely wasn't like poked and prodded. So, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting he said that. And I guess when I listened back, I kind of understood why I was maybe taken as a little bit of a slight.
Yeah, I think it was the throwing the saying he had people throw beers on players. I don't believe that. I think that was an exaggeration.
Yeah, and then he kind of said like, oh, they don't really care about security or something like that. So, you know, he probably would have wanted to rephrase that. And I think he was asked about it today and did say that he meant it more as a compliment, just the atmosphere's awesome and the fans live and die on every pitch and that kind of stuff.
Do you think he's trying to not only convince us, you know, because you're Texas and you know, there's certain cachet that comes with being Texas, and you have certain expectations. And do you think he's having to try to kind of convince his team of who we are and also maybe the Texas fan base?
Yeah, I could see that in a way of him maybe trying to reinforce to his guys, like, look, I know we've never been there. I know, you know, a lot of you don't know a ton about this program, but these guys can really play some damn good baseball and their crowd is going to be all over you. In that second soundbite, he kind of went into talking about like, don't look up, don't look up. The second you do, you've kind of given them what they want. And he didn't say that word for word, but you know, that you're distracted essentially once you look up at the crowd. So yeah, I mean, I could see that being maybe a way for him to reinforce that to his guys. Like, look, this atmosphere is the real deal. Whether you know a lot about it or not, it's for real and you're going to feel it.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes when you're doing these interviews, things can come out a little bit differently than you are, you know, hoping that they would. I think when you hear things maybe slightly out of context, you can form different opinions. I definitely think it came out the wrong way. And I could see why, you know, when I first heard it, I have to admit, I was a little taken back. I said, wow. I did hear Coach walk back his comments today and a little bit. And, you know, I think it's just one of those things. You know, I agree with you guys. He's probably just trying to get his team ready to play. He's trying to get them prepared for what's ahead in the stadium. You know, Kyle, it reminds me a little bit of when you play football at Southern Mississippi and, you know, the bleachers are literally 5 feet behind the bench.
Yeah, it is really close.
I think it was more probably that is what he was trying to say. It just came out a little wrong, but hey, you know what? It's it is one of those things. I'm just excited to play some baseball tomorrow.
Jeff, has Texas arrived? And oh, well, of course they by now they've. If they haven't arrived in Greenville by now, great. Do you know when they're
11 Central here?
Say again.
Jeff, say that again, Jeff.
Oh, you guys. No, I was just saying, yeah, they would have had to arrive by now because of that early game both days. But obviously I know the ECU crowd will be ready to go regardless of when they play that game.
Yeah, 12 o'clock. So, yeah, I was just wondering if you knew when Texas flew into Greenville or, you know, obviously they're here by now. No chance they accidentally went to Greenville, South Carolina, is there? Because a lot of people cannot get that straight.
No. I'm pretty sure they double checked that before, but well, and definitely Pierce, like we were just talking about, Pierce knows where Greenville, yeah. North Carolina is.
Yeah, I know. That's just a running joke. I mean, it is mind-boggling. These ESPN announcers, particularly for baseball, how many of them refer to us as Eastern Carolina instead of East Carolina and say Greenville, South Carolina? It is mind-numbing.
Oh, no doubt about it. Guys, when you first saw the schedule release, the 12 o'clock start time, what were your first thoughts?
Me, I didn't like it. I mean, to me, it takes away a little bit of the crowd environment, you know, that we would have at night. The longer people have time to tailgate, the more lively that jungle is going to be. Plus, just the heat. It's going to be 90 degrees Friday, and that's going to take away not early. But when that game starts to get late, you know, I was there Monday when we won the regional and it was about 88 degrees. And after that big seventh inning, I was exhausted. The whole crowd was. We were out of energy. So I think from that aspect, it'll lessen the crowd just a little bit, the intensity. But they're still going to be hyped up. But, yeah, I definitely wish it was a night game. But, you know, Matt, over the years, it seems like in these super regionals, East Carolina always gets screwed over somehow. The Louisville one is probably legendary for what happened with that. I don't even want to get into that, but at least you do get to host this time.
Absolutely. And Jeff, just to kind of let you know why I asked that question, you know, it's from our perspective, we were really hoping for the night game, the prime time slot where, you know, our environment, our crowd is something we're really proud of here. And we don't get too many opportunities to showcase that on a national TV type setting. So we were really hoping for the night game. I know I certainly was, just as a way to really showcase the program and kind of show off what we're all about here. So a little disappointing from that perspective, Jeff, and that's kind of why I led into that. Just wanted to kind of get your take on that as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're kind of dealing with that disappointment here at Texas a little bit from a football standpoint. So I understand where you guys are coming from because Alabama comes here week two, and apparently that's going to be an 11 o'clock kick on Fox. So, you know, obviously, like you said, the crowd and all that is not that Texas needs to, you know, push its brand on anybody or anything like that, but you want the crowd to be more into it and all that. So, no, I totally get that. I'm going to be honest, though, selfishly from a news standpoint, as somebody that does the 6 and the 10 o'clock news, at least it'll be done early in time for us. So, you know, very, very selfish silver lining for me there.
Well, if you're a road team and part of the what you're worried about is the crowd, which seems to be the biggest discussion, not the team, but the crowd. Well,
definitely for Texas, I would say that's a slight break for sure.
Yeah, you definitely would rather play the early game. And it's funny you mentioned that about your game with Alabama. The Pirates up in the 2022 football season at home against our in-state rival, North Carolina State, who is going to be a preseason top 15 team. And we're happy for the ESPN. Is it ESPN or ESPN2 game? One or the other. But we got the 12 o'clock kick.
So, it is ESPN.
ESPN with the 12 o'clock kick. So great for the ESPN exposure, but nobody likes those 11 a.m. or 12 p.m. games.
No.
Jeff, as you sit in Texas and you have sort of the outside perspective, the outside point of view of this East Carolina baseball program, what are some of the things that jump out at you when you look towards this game and as you look at East Carolina?
Well, I think the first thing that we talked to the same day that we talked to Coach Pierce, we talked to Texas ace Pete Hansen. And from his standpoint, he was saying it, you know, even more so, he's going to have to make sure that he's kind of in control and has a real plan for that lineup, because I'm gonna be honest. I mean, I don't know a ton about ECU, but just from what Pete was saying, real momentum based kind of team. And we saw it in that Monday game where, you know, if you're the opponent, it can be like an avalanche. And, you know, once they get one in that crowd, we've been talking about the crowd, once they get involved, then it's kind of just pass the bat to the next guy. And it can sort of feel overwhelming from a pitching staff standpoint. And at least from the Texas perspective, their bullpen's been really, really shaky this year. So they're going to need a guy like Pete Hansen in that first game to at least, even if he doesn't have his best stuff, to at least get them through six innings so that, you know, they're not cashing the bullpen in a series that could potentially go, you know, three games. But yeah, that was mainly it was just about that lineup that they can, once they get you, they can get confident and get hot really quick.
That's a pretty good evaluation. Speaking of lineups, one thing Texas can do is bat. And got a lot of power in their lineup. You know, everybody knows about everybody should know about the Hispanic Titanic. And what does he hit, 32 home runs now?
Yeah, school records. The school record was 29, so he finally broke that in the Big 12 tournament.
And so who else should the Pirates be aware of in the lineup?
So like we were kind of talking about earlier, you know, all season long, people have been like, why do they keep pitching this guy? Why do they keep pitching this guy? You know, talking about Ivan Melendez. And it's sort of the classic baseball scenario where it's like, well, in one sense, like, where do you put him in certain situations? And in the other sense, there's a guy behind him who can do the same thing. I mean, Murphy Staley has been a huge surprise for Texas. He's a guy that hits behind Melendez. And then after that, they've got, and Staley has 17 home runs. He's hitting like 372. So it's like, all right, well, if you put Melendez on first, or there's a guy on second and you make it first and second, you know, then, well, now you're setting yourself up for a potential, you know, massive crooked number there with Staley. And then all the way down the line, I mean, this Texas team just top to bottom, like you said, Kyle, I mean, they really can just mash the baseball. And it's not your traditional Texas team necessarily in that sense where, you know, they were kind of known for small ball here and there and they would have some boppers. But I mean, 81 home runs was the program record coming into the year. They're at like 118 right now. I mean, they've just obliterated that record. Their guy that hits nine in the order, Trey Faltini, you know, if they didn't have other guys that were that could also hit, he would probably be hitting fourth or fifth. He's got 14 home runs. He's third on the team with, I think, 14 home runs this year. So, yeah, there's really nowhere to go. Like when you talk about pitching around Ivan Melendez, you can try and do it all you want, but you don't really want to mess with the other guys. And that's what's kept Texas in the mix. I mean, for a while, it didn't even look like they were going to host a regional. And then they had to get hot after they got swept by Oklahoma State. And they did. And, you know, here we are. But it's part of the reason why, you know, Texas is going to Greenville and ECU's not coming here to Austin.
You mentioned their bullpen struggles this year. Talk about the bullpen. And starting pitching appears to be pretty good, but who are their best relief pitchers?
I mean, it's been rough right now. I mean, coming into the year, Aaron Nixon was supposed to be their best option, pitched great as a freshman, nice power arm, kind of your traditional closer. They had to move Lucas Gordon out of a reliever role and make him the number two starter after Tanner Witt got injured, young sophomore. He had Tommy John, so he's done – obviously was done for the year early on. But yeah, I mean, this bullpen they've really struggled at time and they pitched well in the regional against competition that, you know, I mean, it was solid. It was NCAA tournament competition, but I'm not going to act like it was your regular, you know, Big 12 series that those guys were facing. So right now it's kind of hard to pinpoint one guy who I would say is their best, most reliable arm. I mean, Tristan Stevens is a guy who was their, you know, redshirt senior, was their number two starter. He kind of was healthy, but, you know, had a situation where he just wasn't pitching as well as he was last year. But he went to David Pierce, and said, hey, coach, maybe, you know, I just want to do anything to help this team win. Maybe I'm going to be, you know, better in a spot kind of reliever role and hit these, you know, hit the opponent kind of in bursts. And so I would say right now he's the most reliable guy that Texas goes to. But that was a last minute deal a couple weeks ago. Like I said, he just goes to Pierce and is like, maybe I'm better out of the pen. And it's worked so far right now. So Texas really has, they have two starters and Pete Hansen's their ace. Lucas Gordon's pitched really well, kind of been a surprise. But yeah, I mean, this bullpen not too long ago gave up 10 runs against Oklahoma State at home in the seventh inning of a game that they were trying to avoid a sweep in. So if they pitch like they did in the regional, then great. Texas is in a good spot. But if they don't, ECU could really attack that bullpen. So I think that's the game plan for ECU is get to these starters early, rack up the pitch count, and let's take our chances with these guys in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Jeff, when you talk about that adversity that, you know, this Texas team has faced this year, and that's something that Craig Way and I were discussing this morning, how both of these programs have been dealt a tough hand and, you know, battled through it this year to get to where they currently are in the Super Regional. You know, East Carolina lost what many people considered to be a lot of the folks at, you know, D1 baseball and scouts thought that Carson Wisenhunt was a top left-handed arm in the country. And then you also had Jake Kuchmaner, who's a veteran left-handed arm, go down and miss 5 weeks of conference play, as well as some other adversities. So both of these teams have really persevered to be where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Texas was essentially the consensus number one team coming into the year. They start the season winning 11 straight. You know, all's great. They're kind of living up to expectation. And they've been through the ups and the downs of kind of being humbled already this year. You know, and then obviously that blow to lose Tanner Witt, a guy that was coming from that closer role that he dominated last year, and then moving into that number three starter at the beginning of the year. I can't remember what magazine it was on, but it was on one of the preseason college baseball magazines. They kind of like reenacted the picture that Roger Clemens and a couple of the other Texas legends were on from way back when they won the World Series in the 80s. They reenacted that because that was like this Texas pitching staff. And then we turn around, they get humbled, and it ends up being the lineup that keeps them in it all year. So, yeah, I don't think this is a Texas team and an ECU team, you know, from what you guys are saying for that matter, that's going to be too concerned if they fall down a couple of runs at some point. And you guys saw it this weekend, you know, ECU could have closed it out on Sunday and then had to come out on Monday and just, you know, kind of gutted it out and put it on Coastal in that other game, and that if necessary game. So yeah, definitely two teams I think that are battle tested and have been through the adversity.
Now, Jeff, what would you say, what has changed? I know, I guess maybe about midway through the year, maybe not quite midway through the year, right when league play was getting cranked up. I know Texas went to South Carolina, lost a series there to the Gamecocks, who did not make the postseason. And then also they dropped a series in league play at Kansas State to a team that was not in the postseason.
There was a minute there where it was getting hard to pick what the low point of the season was, because they go on the road, like you said, to Kansas State. And I don't care. Texas should never – she should never lose a series against K-State, even if it's on the road. And the way they did it, where the pitching just wasn't good and the bats kind of got cold. And then they, you know, obviously they beat Air Force twice in the regional to get it done and had no issue with them. But they lost 14-2 when Air Force came to Austin for a two-game midweek series. They split that, lost 14-2 in the Tuesday game, and then had to walk it off to win 12-10 in the Wednesday game. And then they go out, they won a couple games after that, but then I mentioned the 10 spot Oklahoma State put on them in the series finale of that sweep. So yeah, for a minute it was getting tough. And I think what changed was some guys in the bullpen just saying like, we need, like Pierce essentially got to a point where he was like, I don't even know what to tell him. Just the most cliche stuff. He's like, just believe in yourself. Like that's all you can do, because these guys, you know, and it sounds kind of arrogant sometimes when Texas does this. It's like, you know, come to Texas to play in these big games. Like, we know we have the talent, we're Texas, but it really is true in that sense. Like Pierce just had to tell these guys, like, you have the talent to be here, believe in yourself, and we've seen you do it, go do it. And a lot of these guys have finally started to do that. And man, they made a click at the right time going into that Big 12 tournament. D1 baseball had all these projections of, you know, Texas was a 2 seed going to Fayetteville, Arkansas. And then, you know, that changed pretty quick. They beat Oklahoma State and made it to the championship game of that Big 12 series. And all of a sudden you end that weekend and in the middle of that Big 12 championship game, they're announcing Texas as a host. So they've really put it together at the 11th hour.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a year where conference tournament play and late season play in general really changed projected host sites more than this year. You know, East Carolina was, projected to be a 2 or 3 seed just about 2 weeks before the conference tournament. So, I mean, as low as a 3 seed. So it was crazy how, host sites, teams went from they were going to host to not hosting at all, and then other schools that were going to be 2s or even 3s ended up hosting. And it was really kind of strange to see. First time in my recollection the conference tournament had that much determination on who hosted it. And I know you guys, there was a little controversy with the Big 12 tournament, the host site's coming out while Oklahoma and Texas are still playing. Oklahoma ends up winning the Big 12 conference tournament, don't get the host, Houston or Texas does. And I know a little Sooner fans were a little mad about that, but it worked out for them.
Yeah, and it definitely, I thought that was interesting because it's like, well, you mentioned how much those conference tournaments affected the hosting and the seating and all that. So you're saying it matters all that much, but then, you can't wait till 8:15 Central to release the regional host site. I did think that was a little bit interesting, that decision-making to act like it matters that much, which clearly it did, but then also to not wait.
Yeah, and I think Oklahoma worked out pretty well. They had to go on the road, but I like them against Virginia Tech this weekend. Virginia Tech, to me, had the easiest regional in the history of college baseball, and I actually think that's going to hurt them. I don't think playing a super easy regional while Oklahoma had to go battle to win their regional, I don't know that that's a good thing. I mean, that Blacksburg regional was ridiculous. It was just I've never seen a regional that week.
And I think you could – I maybe wouldn't go that far with the Austin regional last week, but I think you could kind of say that about Texas. Like, I know – I was just saying they've been battle tested over the course of the year, but they really didn't get tested that much in that region.
Yeah, I expected Louisiana Tech to. Louisiana Tech to perform a little better. I know DBU, Dallas Baptist has a great program, but they were kind of struggling towards the end of the year. Didn't win the Missouri Valley, and who else? Air Force out of the Mountain West, and they are what they are. And I know they beat you guys, as you said, in the regular season, but Louisiana Tech was the team I was looking to challenge Texas a little, and Texas just kind of rolled through that thing.
Yeah, they looked great. I mean, La Tech looked great in that first game. I remember all day going in Saturday, we were like, this is going to be the one where Texas gets tested. And in a sense, I mean, they did. They needed to, string together, 6 straight hits in the 7th inning and kind of, get out in front there. And there were some tight moments. But yeah, Texas hasn't been in a postseason game yet, this year at least. I mean, obviously, tons of these guys were on the Omaha team last year where they got, heartbroken by Mississippi State. But, at least in terms of this postseason, that was a relatively breeze of a regional for Texas.
Now, Jeff, you brought up La Tech. Were you there? Wasn't it Louisiana Tech that had the inside the park grand slam?
Yeah, they did. I thought the funniest part about that, too, was it was their catcher. And I think he had 7 RBIs in the game, but yeah, I'm pretty sure that was their catcher that had it. So that's got to be a pretty – I mean, all these guys are crazy athletic, especially these days. But yeah, I think it was their catcher that did it. And I remember, we'll show – especially in a regional, we'll show a couple of highlights from those other games when Texas is going to face the next team. And I remember going through and being like, oh, well, what should I put in from this game? And I'm like, inside the park grand slam, I think they can make TV tonight.
Yeah. That's something you don't see – No. Very often. I know I've never seen it.
I definitely haven't.
And Kyle, to your point about sort of coming out of the regional battle tested, speaking of Oklahoma, fellas, you look at what they were able to do in Gainesville. Now that's a tall order to have to go into Gainesville and beat the Gators twice. They had in that final game, there was a massive rain delay. Oklahoma was down 3-2. They came back after several hours in rain delay and were able to finish that game off and come out of there with a win. So that's a team that, you talk about battle tested, you talk about kind of having a little scare put into you and coming out with a win. That's a team that could be a little dangerous here moving forward. you know, obviously Texas fans don't want to hear that, Jeff, but that's just kind of the way I see it.
Yeah, I think they're gonna destroy Virginia Tech. We might be wrong, Matt. The Hokies might win that Super Regional, but I just don't see it. I think the Sooners play in that tough regional down in Gainesville, and Virginia Tech literally, you know, the 2 seed in the Blacksburg Regional was Gonzaga, and this ain't basketball.
So now, Jeff, speaking of Oklahoma, you know, a lot of folks are well aware of the powerhouse they are in softball, and they're actually playing the University of Texas, a Red River National Championship Series. So, you know, are you going to be there covering that, or where are you going to be?
So we're kind of, you know, it's only about a 6-hour drive from us. So we were sort of, I mean, I'm gonna be honest, we were sort of waiting to see if they would win a game against OU. And obviously last night, they say last night doesn't carry over, but man, I mean, that OU team is just, they're so good. It's stupid. Like, I'm surprised they even lost that game to UCLA. And, you know, their legendary coach, Patty Gasso, was saying, you know, it's like a loss is a good thing. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you're in a place where you lose a game in the College World Series, even though it's full elimination. And, you know, and you can say for your softball team that was a good thing. So I'm kind of scared to look at this, go back inside and look at that score. 16-1 last night was, but it's been great for this Texas team. I mean, they, you know, they've been kind of playing with house money. No one expected them to be here. They're unseeded in the entire tournament.
Jeff, how aware, if at all, is the Texas baseball team and the fan? We got a question here from
Richard chimed in, said he doesn't say what inning it is, but I would imagine fairly early in the game. But let us know what inning it is, Richard. Texas is up 2-0.
Awesome.
But my question was to Jeff, how aware are the Texas baseball players and the fans in general, particularly the baseball team, of the Keith LeClair dynamic? And what that means to Coach Godwin and to this entire baseball team and fan base, and getting this team to Omaha.
Oh, yeah. You just mean in terms of the historical relevance of this for ECU?
Yes. And Cliff's motivation to get this team to Omaha is all due to Keith LeClair. Cliff played for him.
Yeah. I would say probably for the Texas players, not very, and the Texas fans, maybe, but yeah, I would say probably not too much on their radar there.
Yeah, I just think that's an interesting intangible that I think motivates our fans a lot, that people don't think about the outside of the program, that there's a lot of emotion tied to this, more than just baseball, more than just wanting to go to Omaha because we want to go to Omaha. A lot of this is solely because of Keith LeClair, and you know, I would expect if we don't go out and play our best baseball this weekend that we played all year, I'll be shocked.
Now, Jeff, before,
go ahead, guys.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that's why what we were talking about with the home field just being such a big deal. I mean, we feel it when we're here at the dish with Texas. So,
yeah,
I think that is those intangibles definitely are on the side of ECU this weekend.
It's in the third, Texas leading Oklahoma in the softball championship there.
What I was going to bring up a moment ago before we shift over and talk some Texas football very quickly and wrap things up with this segment of the show. I know, obviously, at East Carolina, it's the jungle. At Texas, they're at Dish Falk. It's Occupy Left Field. I actually reached out to those guys on social media. I think they have a following of at least 15,000. I think by comparison, the jungle has 5,500 or 6,000. But, you know, tell us about Occupy Left Field and what those guys are all about.
Those guys are awesome, man. I mean, they're the heartbeat of that Texas baseball team. I remember when, I think it was 2018 when Cody Clemens was on the team and they beat Tennessee Tech in the Super Regional in Austin to go to Omaha. And it was also the same year that Augie had passed not too long before that, the legendary Augie Garrido. And I just remember, you know, how special that was to be there. And those guys in Occupy Left Field, I mean, they're for every game, whether it's a midweek game against Houston Baptist or it's a super regional against Tennessee Tech to send you to Omaha. And the players went out there and actually shot the cannon over there with the guys out in Occupy left field. And it's an awesome atmosphere. They have a bunch of the players' parents are out there. You know, you'll get some legendary Longhorns out there. You know, Brooks Kieschnick, you'll see him out there occasionally just drinking a beer with the guys and hanging out. It's the best of college sports when, and you guys see that all the time with the Jungle, clearly, where it really is the fans are the heartbeat of the team. You could say that about Texas football, but it's such a big brand. There's 100,000 people at the game just don't really get that intimacy that you get. And yeah, those guys in Occupy left field, man, they're a blast. And if it ever flips and ECU gets to come to Austin, go out there and those guys will take care of you, man. And it's a really fun time. It's unfortunate that I'm always working when I'm out there, because I think I'd have a blast with those guys.
Well, why can't East Carolina ever draw Tennessee Tech in the Super Regionals? I mean, we get Vanderbilt in Texas and North Carolina,
Louisville.
I mean, it's never Tennessee Tech. And by the way, speaking of that, just before we segue to Texas football, are you surprised at how terrible that guy did at Rice? I mean, Rice hires him after that super regional there in Texas, away from Tennessee Tech, and he was just absolutely horrible at Rice.
That was really surprising, because I remember when he left, we were all like, I mean, super impressive guy in the interviews, and the players seemed to love him. And obviously they were a great Cinderella story that year, because, you know, you were talking about all the powerhouses that ECU ends up getting when they make the Supers. Texas wasn't supposed to host that. It was like this year where Texas fans were, you know, obviously they were rooting for Coastal in the game on Monday so that they would have to come to Austin. But yeah, I'm surprised that Matt Braga didn't work out, because we all came away super impressed with that team. I mean, that team could really hit that year. And just for them to really just not get it done at all at Rice, I think was surprising, because just everyone knows what a great baseball coach he is.
Yeah, Wayne Graham had always done a great job. Rice, completely different recruiting dynamic. You know, Rice, obviously, you know, the Harvard of Texas, if you will, and Tennessee Tech is not the Harvard of Tennessee. So perhaps that had something to do with it. I think Rice would have been better served hiring the guy who's currently the head coach out at UTSA. He was their pitching coach during some of those great runs under Wayne Graham, and he's doing a nice job out at UTSA.
Yeah.
Bubba, you wanted to segue into Texas football?
Yeah, go ahead.
I got nothing. Matt, take it.
Well, Jeff, why don't you I'll tell you what, that I thought Bubba had something there too. Why don't you – can you give us just a little your feel for the upcoming season here, what to expect from this Longhorn team?
Well, guys, it's like every year with Texas, really in any sport, but especially football, hype train is just unstoppable right now, you know. Can't lose until you play a game. You know, it's I always laugh, even as a Texas alum, that has always cracked me up, to where from a media standpoint, my job now, it's great because the interest is always sky high. Texas football is always a story. But I mean, obviously the big story is Quinn Ewers coming in from Ohio State and coming back home. He was originally committed under Tom Herman, and he's battling out with Hudson Card, who's a local Austin kid here, went to Lake Travis High School. So I honestly think, you know, Steve Sarkisian is going to let those guys battle it out. But when you have a guy like Quinn Ewers who just comes in so hyped, I think unless something insane happens and, you know, the guy behind him, Hudson Card, comes in and just plays his tail off and is like, we just can't not play this guy. I think Quinn Ewers is the guy you'll see, and it'll be like anything else Texas football related. He'll throw one pick and, you know, he'll be the worst guy ever. And then he'll throw a touchdown and he'll be the next Vince Young, you know. So that's just what it is with Texas.
You know, when you look at Texas, such a proud program, such a great tradition. You know, obviously you mentioned the unbelievable crowd and whatnot, just so much talent through the years. Obviously, you know, when you look at the last 10 years or so, it's been a little bit of a, I guess you would say, coaching carousel with a number of changing coaches. What's the feeling right now on Sarkisian and sort of where he's taking this program?
I think everybody seems to like Sark. I mean, that was kind of the big thing with Herman, was honestly it seemed like behind the scenes he had you know, maybe the relationships had soured a little bit, maybe the relationships weren't the best, and you know, all that's water under the bridge now. But with Sarkisian, it seems even despite the 5-7 season, I think people feel like he has this thing going in the right direction. Recruiting looks great right now. I mean, hard not to recruit great at Texas, but yeah, I mean, with this team, they're going to have, when you go 5-7, even though it's your first year, you get the pass for that, but 5-7, you lose at home to Kansas. I mean, you know, this year is going to say a lot about the direction of this program, and new coach at Texas always recruits well. I mean, Herman did the same thing. You know, he had a top five class that second year, the first full cycle. So, yeah, I would say right now, I mean, if people are going to be really disappointed, obviously, depending on what circumstances come up in the season. But if they're relatively healthy and things go well and this team's not playing for the Big 12 championship in Arlington on December 3rd, then I think people are going to be pretty disappointed if they're not at least in that game or in the mix for the conference title.
Yeah, no more Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. They're probably going to be in a big transition year this year.
Yeah.
That's
another thing, is that the landscape's never looked better for them to kind of try to wrestle that crown back and that control back from OU.
Gary Peterson's gone at TCU for some reason. So I think Texas is probably Texas-Oklahoma headed to the SEC next year, right?
We're still, like everybody else, kind of just waiting on the timeline there, but I feel like things behind closed doors have to just begin talked about to figure out, like, you know, let's make this work to where these new Big 12 teams come in, and then that it's the same year that Texas and OU make their first, have their first campaign in the SEC. But man, we're coming up on, what, that was 10 months ago? I mean, I think that caught everyone off guard. That was one of those things where it's hard to sneak big news like that past people these days, just with Twitter and how fast things get out. But that was one of those deals where I think everyone was thrown for a loop. Like, excuse me, what?
Now, let me ask you a question. I have been theorizing, talking about, prognosticating, and I'm going to see if you're hearing something similar or if it's just my paranoia and conspiracy theory brain. I fully believe with NIL, you know, right now you have the so-called Power Five and the Group of Five, which I prefer Tim Brando's term, Autonomous Five, and so-called Group of Five, which, don't get me started. With NIL, East Carolina, hell, you know, North Carolina State, they can't match what Texas can spend, what Texas A&M can spend, what Oklahoma can spend, what USC can spend. We just saw where Pittsburgh couldn't keep the best wide receiver in the country because he's going to go to USC and make $3 million. Yeah. So I theorize that we're about to see three levels of Division I football. You know, right now we have FBS and FCS. I think a 40, and that's the number I'm using, I think we're going to see about a 40-team level, the highest level of college football, consisting of the SEC, the Big Ten, most of the ACC, most of the Pac-12. Do you see that coming?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard to put your finger on, like, when that might happen, but I don't think that's totally off base considering, I mean, you look at the NCAA right now and it's just like, in terms of football at least, like, what are you guys, like, even there for? Like, they haven't gotten out in front of any of these big issues like NIL and transfer portal and all these things that have come up. So, like, what is, like, there's really, I feel like if I'm these schools, like, you know, people are talking about, we've got to stop these collectives, and I don't really have a strong opinion on that one way or the other. That's just how they're getting the money out. And to me, at least, it's over the table now. You know, you can kind of see it, and all the things that come with it not being under the table. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I just don't really know what the point of the NCAA is. So yeah, I could see the Power Five and all these schools kind of getting together and someone forming real leadership and being like, hey, like, let's do this. And then after that, every man for himself. But I know that would really hurt the Group of Five because that.
I don't think it'll be the whole Power Five. I don't think, yeah. You know, with the way things are trending, I don't see the Dukes and the Wake Forests of the world, you know, getting involved with that. Northwestern, maybe even with what they care about academics, and you know, let's see if they become hypocrites if this happens. And you know, there's other.
Oh, they will. They will, Kyle. Because.
I just don't think
because at the school, end of the day, it's all about that money.
Well, that's just it, Matt. There's some of these schools at the Power Five level. I just don't think with the new NIL stuff's going to be able to compete. I mean, how is Iowa State and Kansas State, you know, how are they going to compete in the NIL world, I just don't see how it's going to happen. Yeah, even NC can't. State.
Yeah, you, so, you can't.
Those aren't programs that can go to their boosters and just be like, "Hey, you know, we need you guys to front. We need every running back or every skill position guy to be getting $15,000. Where's the money? Write a check and make a collective. Like, can pull that off, and some of these other schools can. But that's why I think a little bit of that, the Jimbo Nick Saban back and forth that we had, that was just some of the best Twitter entertainment I think we've ever seen in the sports world. Like, I think some of that was honestly Saban maybe, like, and this is just totally me just like spitballing.
There's not as much money in Alabama as there is in Texas.
Yeah, or maybe just nudging those guys that do have it and say like, hey man, like, raise the bar or look what's going to keep happening. I mean, if the Aggies are doing this, and I know I'm UT grad, you know, but they're the second program in the state. Like, if they're doing that, then hey, we need to step it up, because this thing's not going away.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, Kyle, I think I agree with you with the way it's headed. I do think it's headed. I just hate it, and I'll tell you why, fellas. I really do. It's something. I'm such a traditionalist when it comes to college football. I think it's the greatest game we have in this country, and you know, when you look at March Madness, right? You look at NCAA basketball. What is it that makes it so great? It's really what it is.
Well, just look at this weekend, Matt.
Right, and that's where I'm going with this one, is that when you look at college basketball and college baseball, and I just to kind of break it down here, is, you know, there's so much parity, and it's so great for the game. It's great for the country. It's great for schools, you know, that, like, obviously East Carolina in the American, right? You have a team from Conference USA. You have a team from the Big East in UConn. So you achieve parity in those sports. And my biggest complaint right now when it comes to college football is the current structure, it just excludes people. And I always jokingly say, Jeff, I say it's un-American. I really do. I think college football has become a sport for the elites. And you know, I think that's unfortunate. And that's certainly not a knock on the traditional programs, right? I mean, obviously, you guys at Texas, phenomenal history, and you've earned so much of that. But I just like to see, from the big picture, I like to see the smaller conferences, quote unquote, smaller conferences, have an opportunity to compete. And then once you get there, it's up to you to actually perform. So just my two cents. I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but this one gets me going a little bit, fellas.
Now, Jeff, and I apologize if this was – I know you guys were talking about NIL. One of the things that, you know, was well noted, was it 90 or 95,000 at Texas was the going rate for offensive line?
No, so they did the – that was one of the collectives. Was every – some sort of collective put together where every scholarship offensive lineman at Texas was going to get $50,000.
50, okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're if it's between that and something else, like, I could use another 50 grand. You know, I'm not a, you know, 6'3", 300-pound lineman with crazy athleticism like these guys have these days. But, I mean, that's hard to say no to, especially now if it's like legal. You know, you're not breaking the rules if you take that.
Now, what are some of the other more notable NIL deals that Longhorns have inked? Ooh.
Well, the most – I think this is the most notable one in all of college football, and it's kind of done it's kind of spread from there. But Bijan Robinson, the running back who's going to be on Heisman watch all year, he's got a deal with Lamborghini of Austin. So if you see a Lamborghini driving around the 40 acres, as we call it here, is a good chance it's not the head coach, it's not the president of the school, that it's the star running back. So that's –
how much is it worth? How much is an IL deal worth?
Landscape. That's something else. And honestly, Bijan, I will say, is he's a stand-up guy. Like, he is one of the best kids that in my 5 or 6 years here that I've been around. I mean, he'll go media availabilities, shake everyone's hand, look you in the eye, hey, good to see you. You know, not that every kid needs to do that, but, you know, it's one of those where if this is going to happen, you like to see it happen to kids like that who are really talented and really good people.
Jeff, how much is the deal? Is his deal worth? Do you know?
I don't know exactly how much it's worth, but yeah, and you know, those specifics, they don't really release those. Like, I don't, like, does he get to keep the Lambo when he goes to the NFL? Like, are they just giving it to him? Like, Maybe I need to do some investigative journalism on that.
I guarantee you, he's probably getting cash in on Lamborghini. I mean, like I said, that kid out at USC is getting $3 million.
And Addison, who you're talking about from Pitt, he was on the verge of coming here. He was out here for a visit.
Well, y'all didn't step up. You needed to come up with another couple million, apparently.
Like you guys said, it's like free agency, you know?
Yeah, it's nuts. I want to say this with your running back named Dijon, and he's at a Lamborghini dealership. If they don't do a commercial where he's driving around in a Lamborghini and pulls up to a limousine, rolls down the window and knocks and says, "Pardon me, do you have any grape and pond?" I mean, I'm just, you know, thanks, Dijon, you know. Okay.
Hey, now, Jeff, I'm the transfer quarterback from Ohio State. You know, tell us what type of NIL, what's his situation? Was it Quinn Ewers or Ewers?
You guys still got me?
Yeah, we got you. Is that your phone going off?
Yeah, transfer quarterback from Ohio State.
Yeah, Quinn Ewers, man. I mean, he's supposedly the real deal. I mean, I saw him because Westlake out here played South Lake Carroll in the – was that 2 years ago in the state title game, and they actually lost. But, I mean, Westlake, their quarterback is Cade Klumnick, who went to Clemson. So that's kind of a fun battle to see those guys go at it. But, I mean, I want to say, like, he was the highest-rated – Texas commit at any position since like Vince Young way back when. And obviously when Vince signed, that was kind of the infancy of some of these recruiting rankings and all that. But we've heard that a lot about guys that have come to Texas recently. So I think he's the real deal. I mean, he's kind of more your gunslinger type. He's not exactly a, you know, dual threat, I wouldn't say, but I think these guys, I know I've said this like three times now, but these guys are just so athletic now at every position that, you know, he can get around. He's got some mobility. I expect him to be a star at Texas. I mean, it would be a shock if he's not a really, really good quarterback for them.
You know, Jeff, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one of our great all-time players here in the history of East Carolina, Zay Jones, a Texas native who you may or may not be. Absolutely. Under-recruited, I would say. He did not have a ton of offers. I think he might have had one or two offers.
Here, East Carolina and Louisiana Lafayette was it.
Wow. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you. Yeah, and what did he do? He went on to become the all-time NCAA receptions leader by the time he was done. So we were able to, on a few occasions, dip into Texas a little bit and bring in some great talent.
Shane Carden,
thank you. That's right. Another great one from Texas.
It's been fun to watch. So I'm a Vegas Raiders fan, so that was fun watching him catch some big touchdowns for the Raiders this year. But yeah, I mean, and Matt, kind of to your point about how this is affecting college football, you know, with the NIL and transfer portal and all that, just hopefully it stays in place to where guys like that can go to a place like ECU and get enough notoriety and enough exposure to do that, because there are guys developed like NFL players when they're 17, you know?
Yeah. So far, transfer portal, I would say, has been more of a benefit to East Carolina than a hindrance. I'm sure at some point we're going to have, we got a big star running back here, Keaton Mitchell, who had a breakout season this past year. I think he's going to have an even bigger season this year. It scares me. You know, is he going to get some big Power 5 offer? But so far, it seems to be the other way around. We've been able to keep our star players and kind of fill a lot of positions with guys from bigger programs that weren't getting the playing time they needed. So far, the transfer portal has been to our benefit. NIL, on the other hand, not so much.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a great point, Kyle. And, you know, when you look at it, you know, now that this data is starting to come out, fellas, not to get too far off topic here, but there's starting to be some very relevant data when you look at the transfer portal. And there's something like 50% of the players that go into the portal don't actually find a new home. So the grass isn't always greener. And hopefully, as you know, after a few more years here of collecting data, the players will be able to make a more educated decision. And that's something that slows down a little bit, because I don't like the stability of it. You know, it just feels too much like free agency to me, to use a different term. So we shall see, fellas. It's a changing landscape by the day here.
No doubt.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Jeff, really appreciate your time. We'll go ahead and let you run. Appreciate you spending 45 minutes with us, and you know, continued success there in Austin.
Appreciate you guys. It was a blast chatting with y'all, and hopefully we got a great series, and you know, 3-game series maybe. You know, if necessary on Sunday, and maybe they make that one the night game for y'all. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Matt, I don't know what was going off there in the background that appeared to be belonged to Bubba. I don't know. I'm going to assume it was his phone. It could have been something else. I won't say what. Our listeners can use their own imagination.
I did hear it. You know, it was a little.
Did it sound familiar? Was it a familiar sound to you, Matt?
It wasn't familiar to me, but I've heard about it. I've heard about it.
Well, okay. All right. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't know. You know, maybe. We'll keep it family friendly for Dave. Dave, are you with us? Dave is not. Mattis is minding your show from here. We're just going to take it over and we're just going to talk nonsense. Bub and Dave are both here. They're not participating. How do you feel about this weekend, Matt? Are you confident? Are you nervous?
I'm confident. You know, I feel like to a certain extent, Kyle, I feel like we're playing with house money a little bit here in the sense that, you know, for a few reasons, the way the season started out, then you go obviously on this tear through May and June where you win 20 straight. You're hosting. I think that, you know, we have a little bit of a swagger now. I think this is a very confident team. I think they're battle tested coming out of this regional. I do think that, you know, I feel like we're in a really good position here. I feel like the stars are aligning. And to be honest, I feel better, Kyle, about this weekend than I did last weekend.
Wow.
I really do. So I'm excited about it. And I think it's going to be a battle. Don't get me wrong. I think it's definitely going to go 3 games either way. But I feel really good about where we're at.
I keep saying the Pirates are going to win, too. I don't know if I really believe that, but I just keep saying it. We're gonna make Texas go to and barbecue, and we're gonna feast on brisket. I don't know if I really believe it, but I'm gonna just keep saying it. Maybe it'll come true. The thing about it is, you're right. We are playing with house money. When long ago, you know, we were a bubble team to even make a regional, and we end up hosting. We win our regional. And now we're hosting Texas in the Supers. The problem is, even though we're playing with house money, even though if we don't go any further, we can be thrilled with the season we have, there's just such a desire to go to Omaha. And anything short of Omaha is going to be such a letdown. And so I hope the boys can get it done this weekend. I really do. It's a tall task.
And you're right, Kyle. This will definitely be a – I mean, it'd be a disappointment, and that goes without saying. But at the same time, like Cliff has said on multiple occasions, I mean, you have to keep that in perspective, because although it would clearly be a disappointment, I mean, because you didn't win, but I mean, you'd have to, you know, keep in perspective everything that had been accomplished. Yep. And, but I mean, you're right. I mean, you're certainly going to have those people, as you always are, that are going, we hosted this time, we still didn't go. So just people can be ridiculous. And,
well, for me, it would be more of a sadness
rather than disappointment.
Yeah. It's Texas, and we never catch a break with these super regionals, even when we get to host. You know, you get to host and it's friggin' Texas. Look at Stanford has got UConn. I mean, come on. We never catch a break like that. And, maybe we're not supposed to. Maybe it's meant to be, you know, when East Carolina goes to Omaha, that we take out 3 national champions. You know, that's something else. You know, we've already beaten Virginia and Coastal. Let's go ahead and be the 3rd national champion on our way to Omaha.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I was just going to say, guys, I was talking in our group a text earlier today. I know that's a brand name of Texas, but it's 8 versus 9 seed. It's an evenly matched thing. So, yes, brand name-wise, you could say, oh, my gosh, it's Texas. But Obviously, have a respect for the opponent, but I think we have a lot of talent too. And I think the difference with us, unless we mentally break down, the crowd is the difference in this game. I really believe that rocking crowd is going to – that's why the coach – I know it was taken out of context like a lot of people said. If you haven't heard the whole interview, I haven't yet. But you got to admit that having the home crowd like the Jungle and how loud it gets in the grandstand area, it's going to be a big deal, and that's a huge factor for us.
No, no doubt. I think the crowd's a big advantage, and I think the players are going to feed off of it. Vegas, even though we are the 8 seed, Texas to 9, just some interesting odds for you. Vegas has Texas as the favorite to win the series. Vegas also has Texas as the 5th. What's the right wording? They have the 5th highest percentage chance to go to the College World Series right now, according to Vegas. And we have the 15th. Only UConn to win the College World Series. They're the 5th most likely team to win the College World Series right now, according to Vegas. We're the 15th. Only UConn has a less chance of winning the College World Series, according to Vegas. So Texas is the big favorite in this series, despite us being the 8 seed and it being in Greenville. So hopefully the Pirate baseball players use that as even further motivation.
Guys, I'm going to take it like Kyle. Kyle usually says we do better as the underdog. So I'm glad we were the – hey, remember who won the region? Said that Vegas said that Virginia win the region.
Yeah, they did. That's right. I'll tell you this. Aaron Fitt and help me out, guys. So the guy we have on the show.
Mike Rooney.
Both picked East Carolina to win this regional or super regional. So those guys know baseball pretty well. So hopefully they're right.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'll tell you one thing right now. I can't imagine. I can't wait. I wish you guys. I know Bubba's going to be there tomorrow. We're going to be my sister's going with me tomorrow. I had the day off anyway, and I guess I was smart to take the day off months ago for our concert on Saturday. But anyway, I'm glad to have the day off. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'll be in the Jungle. I'll tell you one thing. It's a lot. The atmosphere is very different. It's a different feel out there. And, I think there's a lot of programs that would die to have the fan base that we have in any sport. If it's Tiddlywinks or whatever, you can't die in the Pirate Nation.
Yeah, even though Texas has seen it on video, and even though Coach Pierce and others have told them about it, I still think they'll be a little surprised tomorrow, about noon, when even leading up to that, because, for the UVA and Coastal Carolina games, the Jungle was filling up 30 and 45 minutes before first pitch, and purple and gold cheers. It was very much a football atmosphere, as a lot of people would call it.
Yeah, one thing I'm curious about with the watch party that East Carolina's doing, very smart. By the way, also Southern Miss is doing that. They've had the same issues. But the watch party with 18-inch, that wouldn't be much of a screen, would it? With the 18-foot screen and a 12 noon kickoff, I hope that screen's backlit. Because if it's not backlit with a 12 noon first pitch, it might be pretty useless. So I hope they thought that through. I guess we'll find out. I'm sure they tested it. I heard it was being put up today, so I'm sure they tested it this afternoon. But I was just curious about that. If anybody had any information on what kind of screen it was. Is it an LCD screen? What are we using there?
And by the way, I want to give a shout out to props to the administration for doing the watch party. It was something I thought of, because I know the Hurricanes have done it back in the Stanley Cup back in 2006. Whenever there was away games, they had everybody come up to Raleigh. So kudos to John Gilbert and staff and whoever came up with that idea in the administration. I was really happy about that. And because think about it, guys, when you have all those fans, not only the synergy, all the fans that are inside the stadium, it's going to be loud. It's going to be loud. That sound's going to travel. I think it's going to be even louder than we've ever heard before, for the fans that are going to be there in the parking lot screaming really loud.
Well, what's going to be funny is there's a 5 to 10 second delay from the TV broadcast. So you're going to hear the reaction from the stadium, and then you're going to see what they're reacting to on the screen about 5 to 10 seconds later.
Yeah, I mean, I can, and you were talking, Matt, you made a great point. I really have respect for Texas, and I really believe it's going to be a rubber match again. I think the Pirates win on Sunday.
Pirates and two.
I hope you're right. I'm pulling for Kyle's version. I just think it's going to be a split, and there's going to be the Pirates are going to win game three on Sunday afternoon. I really do. That's my prediction. I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong, but Matt and I are in agreement there. I think both teams are very good and even, and I think both teams win games one and two. I don't know how it's going to – that part I'm not sure about. I could argue both ways. Maybe Texas wins the first game or East Carolina wins the first game and the other wins game two, but I really think it's going to go three games. I really do.
If we win game one, that place is going to be apeshit crazy on Saturday.
We won game one in 2016, didn't we?
That was in Lubbock, Texas.
I understand. I'm just saying anything can happen. We were.
Yeah,
that's the only super regional game we've ever won.
Yes. So yes. If we win game one, I that's going to be the key to me. Obviously, we can't win it in two if we don't win game one. But if we win game one, I'll be surprised if it goes to three games. But you know, I really don't care as long as we win the thing. Okay. You know, that's all that matters. But this is something East Carolina fans have wanted for so long. And again, I go back to, you know, I don't know. I can't imagine, and I'm sure Cliff is going to make this about this team and only this team because that's how he is. But internally, you know, he's got Coach LeClaire on his mind. And, you know, he's got what this program means to him on his mind. And getting that 23 to Omaha, and I hope it happens.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you listen to Cliff's comments today. He mentioned that he's thought a lot less about Omaha this year than he has in the past. And I don't know if you guys caught that today.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah, and I thought that was interesting. I think my interpretation of that was obviously we're at home, so you know it's a slightly different mindset. But I also what I took from it too was, you know, this team, I think they have the it factor. They, you know, they're going to approach it one game at a time. They're going to keep their eye focused on just getting the first win. You get the first win, then you got to get the second win and keep Omaha in the background for now and just focus what's right in front of you. And I really think this team has that maturity. They have the it factor. And you saw it last weekend. I mean, we had everything to play for Saturday night against Coastal. Let's face it, we got blown out. And for them to come back less than 24 hours later and put it on Coastal like that, and that says a lot to me. I mean, I know that's baseball, but I think this team has the – I think they have the it factor. I really do. And I think they're mentally tough. I think they obviously have a great coach. And, you know, I just think you just have to approach it one game at a time. Get the first win and see where you go from there.
Cliff might not be thinking about Omaha, but the fact that they didn't dogpile for the regional championship, they're thinking about Omaha.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And by the way, Matt, can I give a call to – I'm going to talk to Chrissy to see if you can come down, you know, for this weekend, or at least if it's maybe Sunday. If we still – and I'll pick you – we'll pick you up. Bubba and I'll pick you up from the airport. Kyle will come too. We'll pick you up, take you to the jungle.
I'll come too, Matt.
Let's go.
I'll come too.
Yeah. If, we might have to do this live right now. Should I do this to myself? If we get to the game three.
I've got your ticket. I've already got your ticket for the game.
You're flying now for game three?
Yeah, come on. I don't know about flying, but I'm saying I'm going to
You better drop down for game two because we're going to win it in two.
I hope you're right, Kyle. That's.
They're like, who's that guy on the megaphone in right field? That is Matt Semenza.
Like heckling the pitcher. I could see you right now, you and Kyle. I want to be with you and Kyle in right field heckling the pitchers for there in the bullpen for the opposing team. That would be priceless. I'm going to record it. So
there will be no game three for Matt to come to. We're going to win it in two.
Okay.
I like it. I like the confidence.
I don't care if it's game two or three. Like you said earlier, as long as we win, right, Bubba?
Yeah. I was waiting to, you know, for the opportunity to give my prediction. And I do think that, you know, when I look at this matchup, these teams are very even in terms of pitching and defense. I think Texas has a 987 fielding percentage, which is just ridiculous, because East Carolina at 983 is, I think, fourth or fifth in the nation. So Texas is bound to be, you know, first or second, I would think, with that 987. And then I know the Pirates have, I believe it's just under a four team ERA, while Texas is just over four. And I know those numbers are in the top 20 or so in the nation. But one of the differences I see is, you know, obviously Clark LeClaire is a hitter's park most of the time, you know, unless it's early season when it's cold or the wind's just howling in. It's generally, you know, referred to and thought of as a hitter's park. So Texas has 118 home runs, 150 doubles.
Bubba's taking the Longhorns.
Nearly 50 more in each of those areas than the Pirates. But I think the Pirates win it in three, and we drop these on them.
Yes, love it.
Very nice. Very nice.
Nicely done, Bubba. Nicely played, as they say. And Matt, can we get the what's the over under that you're going to drive down for game three? Because I'm telling you guys, I'm not saying I don't believe in our Pirates. I just have mucho respect for Texas. It's evenly matched. That's how you can see it's going to be like a two heavyweights, if you will, like a heavyweight fight where they're both hitting and for pound, or, you know, so even, like Bubba just said. But game three,
I don't think we're even at all. I think Texas is way more talented than us, but we're going to beat them in two games.
All right, Matt, game three.
As I told Jessica, the most talented team doesn't always win.
That's true. I mean, they have a guy – Texas has a guy sitting on the bench that has hit double-digit home runs. I mean, that's sick.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I not to harp on the 12 o'clock start time, and I am going to make a point here eventually, but – I hate it from the perspective of the fans. I hate it from the perspective that we don't really get to showcase our program like I wanted to in a primetime slot. But I do feel like from the perspective of winning the game, I feel like it's a good thing to get them a little bit earlier in the day. We're at home. So I think from the perspective of winning the game, I think that's a good thing. So I'm really, you know, I know Kyle's confident. I haven't heard you this confident with a prediction in a few months, so I like it. I'm feeling three myself, but I feel like we're going to pull it out. And if we go three, I will make my way to Greenville and hang out with you guys. How about
the last time I was this confident in a prediction, it was the Tulane football game.
Okay. All right.
So hey, Kyle, I love your prediction. I don't want to lose to them ever. I just, like I said, I really
don't. I don't care if it's two or three, honestly. I don't even know if I really believe it's two, but I'm just gonna keep saying it until it happens.
Please do. Hey, that way we don't have to worry about anything, right? You don't have to worry about game three when you take care of business. And Bubba, I know I want to remind everybody, we've had a lot of thank you, Johnny. Get ready.
Four.
These bucks.
Hey, look. Yes. The next shirt coming, guys. Go ahead, put your orders in now. Who's going to Omaha on front? These bucks on back.
There you go. Well, I tell you what. I don't care. Well, whatever it takes to get to Omaha, if it's those damn shirts or whatever, I'll take it for sure. And Matt, I know we're gonna have a lot of great tailgating on Sunday, because you and I we're gonna be together. And
y'all are gonna be together, Matt.
If you know, can we get some of the some of the good Bees barbecue, please?
Not on Sunday.
Okay,
you have to come on set late Saturday morning and drive it.
you better get there about 9 a.m.
Well, you better be like, 9, 10 a.m. Yeah,
it's been a while, fellas.
You're gonna get Parker's, or maybe somebody can somebody pick up some Bees, put it in the refrigerator. And save it for Matt if there's a game three.
Absolutely. Hey, whatever it takes, but it's going to be I just can't imagine the atmosphere for the regional was way over the top. It seemed even louder. And by the way, I wanted to make a quick point too, talking about this year. Would I be disappointed if we don't go to Omaha? Of course. But I will tell you something. I think we would be really upset and really hurt if we didn't even make a regional. That's what it was looking. It felt like the way we started out, we would not make a regional. Even though there was a lot of baseball, that would be a big disappointment. That would be where you would be really hurt. For me, obviously, I'd be disappointed if we don't make, you know, Omaha, because we want to go there so bad. And I'm sick and tired of hearing about the stat of how we have 32 regionals and never made it a College World Series appearance. I'm so sick and tired of hearing about that from the national media. So from that perspective, yes. But as far as this program, there's a lot of people selling tickets online. We were talking about that in our group text earlier. Why would you do that? Why would you scalp your tickets other than money when...
Well, it may be coming from Texas fans. We don't know. I mean, you don't know how many are being sold. You know, a lot, 200 tickets appears to be a lot being scalped. You know, if there's 200 tickets on StubHub, and that's just the number I'm throwing out, you know, that could be 150 Texas fans and 50 East Carolina fans. But if it is East Carolina fans and you bought tickets, which means you're, if you, particularly if your tickets are in the bleachers, not the jungle, means you had probably baseball season tickets and your Pirate Club priority points are pretty damn high. You're not in a need financially to scalp those tickets. Right. So it's kind of weird to me. My guess is a lot of those are Texas fans or maybe just somebody who legitimately couldn't make it after they bought them. I still don't agree with putting them on StubHub. I would just sell them to another Pirate for face value or just a little bit above. But, you know, it's a free market. People are allowed to do that. So it is what it is. That's fine. And jungle tickets are coming down a little bit on StubHub. They were some as low as 75, which is still very high. But they are coming down a little bit. Right now on StubHub, you can get tickets in Section 201 and 202 for around $220.
That's still a little pricey.
That's way pricey.
Yeah, when you consider you could get the weekend for $34 a ticket.
Yeah,
34 versus yeah. 205, brothers.
Yeah, no, that's really pricey. No, that's my point. But I hope it comes down a little more because, like I said, those jungle tickets have come down some. And if you check, I have seen some jungle tickets for sale. If you go over to Boneyard Banner, and I'm not promoting Boneyard Banner by any means, but if you go over to Boneyard Banner to the ticket exchange, keep a watch out. They're going fast as soon as people post their jungle tickets for sale. And people up there are selling them for reasonable prices.
Hey, now, Dave, very quickly as we're wrapping this up, you know, ECU baseball, they had an awesome video prior to last weekend's regional. Last week it was narrated by Zach Agnos. This week it is entitled "It Doesn't Get Better Than This," narrated by Bryson Wall. Go and check that out. It is an unbelievable video. Lewis Gale, as you see there at the bottom of the screen, replied and said, "Currently looking for a brick wall."
All right, I got to watch that.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun, guys. Game 3, Matt, we'll see. We'll pick you up at the airport, PGV. And we'll get your time. And Kyle, I hope that we're wrong. Sims, that's right, Sims, North Carolina for Bryson Worrell, and a fifth-year senior, and proud of him for sticking out. Goes to show what can happen if you. I don't know if you guys heard that story real quick, but Cliff Godwin told about how, what was it, Bubba? Like a $25,000 signing bonus. It was next to nothing.
It was 20 grand, he said that he didn't want to sign for that, And actually, you know, Cliff had said it first, and then, you know, Bryson totally agreed. And Cliff said, "Well, don't sign then, you know, come back and let's do something special." And they're doing something special.
No doubt. So lovely. Look at if he had taken that 20 grand, just think about his growth in just the season, how he and Cliff also said he's playing healthy now. He was not healthy last year. Which you guys being athletes know what that's like to play hurt and maybe.
I definitely do.
Yeah, you do. You're a superstar athlete. You're an all-star. Hey, but now you're an all-star, Kyle.
Absolutely. You know, what a decision. I mean, you talk about, $20,000 by the time you take taxes out of that,
nothing.
You know, you're down to, you know, you just took out 40% roughly. And you know, he gambled on himself. He gambled on himself. And yep. He's going to look back on that decision 20 years from now. And he's going to say, that's the best decision I ever made in my life. Because $20,000 is an insult for a player like that, in my opinion. So I'm just happy for him that he made the right choice.
And, Bubba, I know we wrap things up. I was just going to make one real final point on Bryson. Imagine his legacy. A lot of players today don't care about that. We talk about money and all that. But imagine his legacy, guys, where he's going to be play at the next level, Major League Baseball. But he can say, I had brought the team. We had a super regional to Greenville the first time ever. And who knows, maybe after this weekend we're being confident. He was one of the guys, the leaders on this team, that finally got us to Omaha. I mean, think about that legacy in addition to his Major League career. I would love to have that legacy, my friends.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, a lot of times, or, you know, most of the time, you know, for juniors, it is better to go ahead. But in Bryson's case, it was not. And he came back and he really made himself some money. Can't wait to see where he goes in the draft. But I'm trying to – the name's escaping me at the moment. But we had another senior here in the last probably 6 to 8 years that did the same thing. It may have actually been under Billy Godwin, but we had a player within the last decade at least that, you know, had that opportunity to go pro after his this junior year, but then opted to come back for his senior season and really made himself some money.
And here's another one. All right, and I want to remind everybody, we're going to actually have we'll have a post-game comments. We'll have we'll have a show tomorrow night for sure, guys, and we'll see how the Pirates do after game one, and that'll be noon on ESPN 2. Plus, we have our good friend Scott Rogers, a play-by-play voice of the ECU Baseball Pirates, and that'll be on locally on 94.3 The Game. I know, Kyle, it's on the Varsity app, plus TuneIn Radio app as well. So however you're going to watch, listen, however you're going to assume the game, it's going to be great. All right, we're going to get out of here. We have had a great show. We appreciate you so much, and we'll be with you all weekend long as the road to Omaha, it starts in Greenville, and we'll see you tomorrow after the game right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. And always go Pirates. Team knows that we got they back.